4, 3, 2, 1. You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 594. No intro music this week. No between music. Why? Because it is a news rampage week. We got a lot to talk about on this episode. We're going to be talking about Punk Rock Bowling. We're going to talk about Martin Square. We're going to talk about Quam, Mike Park, the Dead Kennedys' new remix album, Star Carl's new video, and Boots Riley doing what Boots Riley does. But is there a certain hypocrisy in Boots Riley's new movie? We'll talk about that and much more on this episode of Punk News Podcast. And there is no break, so I'm just going to keep talking. Listener, what you don't know is that episode 600 is right on the cusp. It is 4 weeks away, 5 weeks away. And just now, we have decided what we're going to do. If it pans out, I don't know if it's going to pan out, but it might pan out. And if it does, it's going to be a very cool episode 600. And not only that, a lot is happening at Punk News. First of all, Hallie Blip, the Unlovables just re-released one of your guys' albums, and it sold out immediately. Repress, repress, repress. The people are demanding. What are you guys going to do?
No, that's it, man. You snooze, you lose. And we didn't repress it. We had a label in Europe. I didn't know you were going to talk about this. That's very nice, John. There was a label in Europe that's like reissuing a lot of classic, like, kind of like late 90s through like aughts pop punk, and they asked us if we wanted them to press our first full length Crush Boyfriend Heartbreak on vinyl. And that album, which is so crazy, it had never come out on vinyl, and I'd had so many fans be like, Hallie, how did that album never come out on vinyl? It was our first full length, and we were a newish band, and the label didn't want to pay the money for it, and we weren't insisting. We were just happy to have any label support at all, and so it only came out on CD, and now all these years later, like 17 years later, this like label in Europe is like, you want your record on vinyl? And I was like, I fucking do want my album on vinyl. I'm like so excited. It was like at just dropped into my lap out of the clear blue sky, and now like that album, which I think a lot of people would say is like the definitive album that we ever put out, like I'm going to get to like hold it in my hands as a vinyl record, you guys. I like really could not be like more excited about it. And it's pink and it's pretty. And yeah, I put it up on our, you know, I'm busy. I'm momming. I'm podcasting. I'm doing all my shit. So I posted it on our Bandcamp with all the photos and everything. And I was like, I had time to do it on like a Friday night. That was like when I finally had time to just sit down at my computer and do the work of like getting into the Bandcamp and putting up all the images and the description and the thing. And I was like, well, I'm just going to leave it here in secret. I was like, and I'll post about it on social on Monday when more people are like looking at their social media. And I like never even had a chance to post about it, really. It just sold out. So I guess we had like enough people that just follow us on Bandcamp or word of mouth or whatever, but they're all gone now. This is crazy.
What is it like hearing you talk about issues from 17 years ago in your life? Is it enjoyable or horrifying or both?
That's a really good question. I mean, 17 years ago, I don't know. It feels like a really long time ago. So when I'm talking about shit in my lyrics and it feels very different from the person I am now, I'm like, oh, yeah, well, I should be different. It was 17 years ago. Like, I don't know. I guess it doesn't bother me. You know, although there's a song on Heartsicle. I don't listen to my music very often. Our second full length was called Heartsicle. And there's a song on it that I remember being so proud of at the time. And musically, I still love it. But I listened to it recently because my son asked to hear a song of mine. And I was like, oh, I haven't heard this one in a while. Let me put it on. And like, I think I'm kind of maybe shaming someone with chronic depression. Like, it just was a very different time back then. And, like, I remember the guy that I wrote it about. It was a guy that I dated that, like, got fired from his job. And he went through, like, a really, really blue period. And I felt kind of, abandoned. But whatever. It doesn't have to get too personal. But, like, I'll just say that, like, the way that we all talked about mental illness was very, very different back when I wrote this song. And it was interesting to hear it again and to be like, you know what? I think I fucking had the wrong take on this. Like, I think I really raked this person. I really judged this person super harshly for feeling bad And now if I were dating someone that were, I mean, my husband talks very publicly about struggling with depression and mental illness. So I've obviously changed my tune about it significantly. But yeah, so that's, it's interesting that you asked that, John, because that's the only one that I, like a song of mine that I listened to recently where I was like, oh, I was like, yeah, I fucked up. I like kind of fucked up and maybe didn't give this person the support that they needed. That was kind of hard to realize, but. You know, I'm glad that we as a collective have like a better way of talking about helping people when they're fucking in the mud like that, you know?
Earlier today, I emailed a editor for a different publication and I wrote a long email about rudimentary peni and said, sorry for my long email. I'm just nutty. And then was that in poor taste to use the word I'm nutty when referring to rudimentary peni, how people in regards to mental health?
No, I don't think so. Not nearly as bad as me basically like saying to someone with chronic depression, like, cheer up, man, I'm sick of your whining.
But are you being too hard on yourself? Are you being too hard on yourself in that it was a different era? People didn't know then what they know now. You know what I mean? So you kind of, you know, can we blame Caesar for... you know, destroying villages when that's what Romans did back in the day. You know what I mean?
I mean, you know, yes, like both. Like, I think like maybe I just should have been like a slightly more like aware person. And yeah, and also I can kind of like let myself off the hook because I was doing the best that I could with the information that I had at that time. And I luckily have much better information now, you know?
Well, there you have it. Well, I would say go out and get it right now, but you can't because it's sold out. So go on Discogs and scrape up whatever you can, kids. Meanwhile.
You can order it from Europe. It's just our copies are gone. You can order it from the...
The label in Europe is called
Hey Suburbia. And if you are willing to pay for, you know, the euros plus the shipping and the thing, it's expensive, but you can get it.
Well, there you have it. If I were you, I would order it today because it will not be around forever. And then actually, buy it today. Meanwhile, M Moore has been doing a whole bunch of interviews at Punk News, and M Moore is really taking the reins at the website, which is cool. M Moore just did a huge interview with a couple of cool bands, but one of the bigger interviews that she did was extended, and it was real good. And that interview was with a cool band, and Maddie Grace. Tell us about the extended Maddie Grace interview, M. Moore. And also, M. Moore is now also orchestrating a very cool article that is going to be out. It's an everybody article where all the writers and editors jump in. So that's going to be very cool, too. But tell us about the big Maddie Grace interview, M. Moore.
Yeah. Okay. So Maddie Grace is just amazing. Like, just, oh, my God. I can't believe I got to talk to her. So, and just, like, coolest person, just so cool. So, yeah, she's in Future Girls, Cluttered. She has solo stuff. She just formed a new band called Crisis Party, which, like, shocks about a bit more in the interview. Yeah, but we talk about lots of really, really interesting stuff, like her songwriting process in, solo versus bands and then how she keeps like all the different projects kind of like going and everything. Mental health, we talk about that quite a bit. Clutter just released we premiered it too. But they released a split with a talk show host where they cover Enemy You songs. That's called Enemy Us and it's out right now. So if you want some like more insight behind it, read the interview. The interview is, really good. It was longer than I expected, but I'm really glad that it was that long because of like what we got into and, like her answers are great. And, it was really, really, really interesting. It took me about 3 days to transcribe it, but it was worth it. So yeah, please check that one out. It's really good. They're all really good, but like that was really good.
That's awesome.
And Moore's been killing with interviews, people, so be sure to check those out. One last question I could put for Hallie Bullet and M, and then I got something to talk about, too, and then we'll get to the actual show proper. Bauhaus played their first show in the USA in a long time, although I think they've done UK shows pretty recently. And Bauhaus, one of the greatest bands ever. And reactions were mixed, and I mean mixed in the literal sense, in that some people said it was like the greatest thing ever, and some people said they fought on stage the whole time and were kind of a mess.
Oh boy.
Who cares about that? Because he's the real question. Peter Murphy, the formerly, I guess, svelte, you know, sharp-looking kook singer, he is now totally bald and has a gigantic gray beard. Halle Bullet, good look for Peter Murphy, or go back, go back.
I haven't actually looked at modern-day Peter Murphy. Hold on, hold on, hold on. Looking this up.
I mean, I saw him like 2 years ago at the amazing Peter Murphy and David Jay do all in the flat field. And it basically was like Peter Murphy from, you know, when I mean, a little older. And he was gone thin a little bit up top, but who cares? But I'm saying it looked like Peter Murphy. Now, in the past 2 years, he pulled a Billy Joel. Like, Billy Joel looked exactly the same from, like, 1971 through, like 1997. And then between 1997 and 1998, he, like, aged, like, 35 years. Like, I don't know what happened. Peter Murphy, kind of the same thing. Do Peter Murphy Cruel World and look at pictures.
Peter Murphy. I don't know. I mean, it's not going to look the same. He's not going to look the same as he used to look. You know what I mean? We all get older. We all, like, don't, you know.
But Peter Murphy is famous for his avant-garde and daring and tasteful fashion choices. So the question is this a good fashion choice?
This is not my favorite fashion choice.
And more, what do you think of Peter Murphy's current fashion choice?
Well, when you described it, I was picturing, like, bald Gandalf. And looking at it, it's like, you know, kind of a sculpted kind of facial hair. You know, like the little mustache bits look kind of artsy. Yeah, he looks kind of neat. He looks dramatic.
Well, listen, listeners, don't listen to Em and Halle or being shallow. Bauhaus is awesome, but it doesn't matter what Peter Murphy sounds like, because the band is great, and you should all go see them. I can't wait. I've seen Peter Murphy solo 4 times. The first time was real bad because he talked the whole time. And like the word was, for the encore, he covers Iggy Pop, the Stooges, Raw Power. And the whole show, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to hear Raw Power. I can't wait to hear Raw Power. So I missed the entire show because the entire show, I'm like, I can't wait for the encore. And he talked like literally like 10 minutes between each song, and he didn't do any Bauhaus song, and they didn't do an encore. The second time, it was him doing all Bauhaus, and it was amazing. The third time, it was him doing all Bauhaus, and it was amazing. The fourth time was one of the greatest shows I ever saw. Peter Murphy and David Jay doing all of In the Flat Field and Bauhaus choice cuts, and it was amazing. So it doesn't matter what he looks like. And what matters is the art. So listen, people, beauty is just – wait. Is it beauty is skin deep or beauty isn't skin deep? Or what's the phrase?
Beauty is just skin deep?
At any rate, listen, people, go see Bauhaus. Also
– But I will say, I agree with Em. This is a dramatic look, and I think that's the most important thing. At least he's not, like, up there in, like, a grandpa sweater or, like, khaki or something, right? He's up there. Like, he's got a dramatic thing going. And I would say he looks like one of the villains from – which is the Superman where there's, like, those three villains dressed in black?
I think it's Superman 2, I think.
Superman 2. I think that might be Superman 2. I think he looks like he's from Superman 2 in these photos.
He does. I was going to say something else about Peter Murphy, but I can't remember. Anyways, Bauhaus is awesome, people. Peter Murphy solo, not so much, except for the Lion album, which is fantastic. At any rate, listen. So here's something that's wacky. If you live in the Philadelphia area, May 24, Tuesday, at Wilmington Brew Works, the caricature DJ Johnny G will manifest in real life and will actually be spinning records as a DJ. Will it be terrible and ridiculous? Come to May 24th, Brew Works, to find out.
Quick query. That's so fun, John.
It's going to be so cool.
I'm actually like really excited about it. But I'm thinking is, like, I've got a lot of, like, kind of, like, rare and valuable records, and I think maybe I shouldn't bring them because they might get banged up, right? Like, when you're DJing stuff, stuff gets, like, banged up, right?
No, I mean, why? What are you expecting people to be doing to your records? Are you going to be banging them up?
No, but like, if I'm dropping the needle midway through the record, there's a chance it could get scratched because if I like shake or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, but then I want to bring the killer cuts, and some of my records are, you know, killer cuts are only on the most rarest records. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't know, man. At any rate, May 24, Wilmington Brew Works, people, come on out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be spinning records, and then who knows? I might be DJ Johnny G might become more of a regular DJ. Ironically, DJ Johnny G was created for the Punk News mixtapes as a ridiculous caricature that thought he was the coolest guy ever, but actually had no idea what he was doing. And somehow the fake DJ Johnny G convinced the real Johnny G that DJ Johnny G is cool. So we'll see how that plays out. Listen, here's something else that's cool. Punk Rock Bowling. It's coming back in 2023. There will not be Punk Rock Bowling in 2022. And frankly, for the past, since Punk Rock Bowling 2021 in August, Punk Rock Bowling has been very vague about the 2022 plans, and I guess once we got about 3 or 4 months into 2022, everyone kind of said, well, it's probably not going to be a Punk Rock Bowling this year. Well, it's official, there is not going to be a Punk Rock Bowling this year, but there will be one in 2023. Interestingly, either we jumped the gun or we are very powerful reporters, because we posted our article before Punk Rock Bowling did an announcement. And the way I knew this info is I saw on the Punk Rock Bowling webpage that they had updated their graphic for 2023, and therefore I knew that there was not going to be a Punk Rock Bowling 2022. And so we posted, guess what, people? There's not going to be a Punk Rock Bowling 2022. There will be a Punk Rock Bowling 2023. Breaking news. After we posted this, the Punk Rock Bowling organization issued a statement. And honestly, it was kind of a curious statement. Of course, as the listeners surely know, Punk Rock Bowling is handled by the Stern brothers. Mark Stern and his brother, Jimmy Bohab Stern. I don't know the other Stern brothers. Let's see. Let's look it up real quick.
Sean
Stern. And they have been throwing shows since literally the early – actually, they are one of the guys that are like kind of essential in throwing shows – or not essential, seminal in throwing shows after the – like after the Germs and Avengers era of West Coast punk. They are kind of the guys that continue to in the hardcore, and they are very important throwing shows-wise. And they've been throwing shows ever since, and that's why Punk Rock Bowling has become as big as it is. What was very surprising is they issued a statement, and they said that Punk Rock Bowling is no longer the Stern brothers. Now Punk Rock Bowling is just Sean Stern, and Mark Stern has decided to leave Punk Rock Bowling. This is curious, and this is weird, because it's like, you guys, like, are they fighting? Are they getting along? Did one person decide not to do it anymore? Very curious, and we can blindly speculate, which I think we should do because that's what we do on this show. and more. What's the deal? Will it affect Punk Rock Bowling at all? And isn't it weird for Mark Stern to leave Punk Rock Bowling when, after the year of hardship, but also, you know, Punk Rock Bowling's kind of got everything. I mean, they've been doing it so long now. They know what they're doing, and so it's a, quote, easier job than it was 15 years ago. So is it weird to leave at a time when the gravy train is well on the tracks?
It does seem really, like, suspect, you know? Like, it kind of seems like this is why there isn't a Punk Rock Bowling 2022,
indeed,
you know?
Indeed.
Because, like, he seemed like such a big part of it, and then him being gone, now they have to restructure and they have to do all that. So I read his statement, and it was just like, I feel like it's time for me to start new endeavors. The world is ever changing. We must also reinvent ourselves to keep life fresh and innovative. And it was like, that's an interesting way to phrase things, because that doesn't sound like a human talking. You know, that sounds very, like, press release-y. Like, it sounds very robotic. And then in the Instagram post written by Sean, he's like, I know you all will join me in thanking, him for the dedication and hard work that was pivotal in creating our incredible festival over these many years. We wish him luck and success with his new endeavors, but the Punk Rock Bowling team is now hard at work for next year and the show will go on.
It's like it's his brother. It's like he's thanking an employee. I think that's weird. Yeah. You know, it's your brother. Like, we would like to thank. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, there's not really – neither of them are that personal. Like, neither of them are – you know, it's like it's something that you did together for, like, over 20 years, you know?
And,
like,
and your brothers.
Exactly. Like, I don't know. Something really – I think something's going on, but I don't know what it is. I don't think they're getting along. Just from, like, the way this sounds. But, again, it's so hard to tell. Because there are people who just talk like that, but not very many. I'm glad it's back. But something's amiss. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I can't tell. I mean, I feel like Punk Rock Bowling, like, I feel like that's a festival they're concerned about their image. Like, I feel like a lot of the statements that are released, they're, like, very carefully worded. Like, I don't, So I don't know. I don't know if they're like trying to just cover up something that's like a personal drama, or if that's just how they handle their publicity. You know, I think it's possible that someone could just be, I mean, music festival, even if it's a thing that the infrastructure is all in place, it's still like kind of a logistical nightmare, right? To run a festival. It's just a lot of fucking work. And I don't know. I think also COVID kind of, you know, I'm totally speculating here, but I just feel like COVID took a lot of the joy out of some stuff for people. You know, we lost a lot of great bands broke up in the COVID years. You know, I just feel like it made things that were already logistically hard just impossible. And I think sapped some people's energies in a way that made them not be able to continue with projects. So I don't know if that's, I don't know what's going on here.
I agree with Em that I certainly don't know, but I do think it's internal conflict, because if one brother was like doing, like wanted to do something else, they'd be like, you know, and my brother, he's doing this other cool thing, so be sure to check that out. And meanwhile, we're going to keep the punk rock blowing going. Like, it does seem very impartial, very informal. Hallie definitely is bulldo, Hallie Bullet definitely is correct. And that punk rock bowling is extremely image conscious. And I know that firsthand.
Right?
When we used to interview bands and stuff, like the publishers would email us like, oh, could you rephrase this, or could you change this question? It's like, no. It's like, no one cares. You know what I mean? It's like,
And I
do wonder, I mean, honestly, I think punk rock bowling is pretty successful, and it should be, but there is a line where so much impartiality can hurt you. Like, let's use Joan Jett as an example. Joan Jett is an awesome musician, but in her interviews, she gives up nothing. You're like, so Joan, like I understand, like, not want to talk about her personal life, you know, but it's like, so like Joan, you wrote a song about Katrina. Why did that influence you so much? And her response would be like, well, we wrote a song in G. We wanted a short, punchy song that talks about the events of Katrina. That's like, thanks, Joan. That's real useful. Like opening up a little bit, I think, like, let people, you can't really blame Joan Jett for that, because she came from a really icky era in LA when everybody's trying to prey on you. You know what I mean? And so, like, maybe that's an offensive. So I'm not picking on Joan. But I do think Joan should open up a little bit more in her interviews, because she does a lot of interviews, but she never says anything. You know,
her guard is up, man. Yeah, right? Yeah. Her guard is permanently up.
I think I told the story once before, but I'll tell it real quick, is when I did interview Joan Jett one time, and she was cool, but I got her to drop her guard a little bit, because I knew that she stole Dave Johansen's beer bottle at a New York Doll show, and she never really talked about that. And so I answered that question, and she lit up. So that got me about two real questions. You know what I mean?
She stole his beer bottle?
So she's a huge New York Dolls fan, right? So when she was like 14, she went to a New York Dolls show, and she stole Dave Johansen's beer bottle.
Oh, that's so cute. That's awesome.
So I knew that, and I asked her about it, and then so I got her to drop her guard a little bit, you know.
So she was like psyched to talk about that, because it probably, it was such a good memory for her, you know, and that's like a memory from before she was, you know, in the music industry and like dealing with all of that. That's cool.
So at any rate, I think the strength of punk rock bowling, Riot Fest is cool too, but as opposed to Riot Fest, which is pretty corporate, punk rock bowling is seen as less corporate. I don't know what that, I mean, it seems like it is less corporate to me than like, what's the other fest in Las Vegas? It's like all the emo bands, when we were young, is like strictly corporate. And it seems like punk rock bowling is more, not homogenous, more, organic. It seems like it's dudes and gals doing cool stuff because they want to do cool stuff. And so the strength is that it isn't, you know, Live Nation behind the scenes. It's Mark and Sean Stern. And so I think the strength is that even with Mark gone, it's still – like, I think they could be a little bit more I actually interviewed Mark Stern once. Yeah, that's right. I interviewed Mark Stern once about punk rock bowling. And I was like, so what are you most excited about this year? And he's like, I'm excited about all the bands. I'm like, all right. why did you guys choose to throw shows? Because we wanted to make a scene. You know, it's like, you know, you could be like, I saw Iggy Pop when I was 14. Like, people like the personal side of things, you know? And so I think I think punk rock bowling could be a little bit more personal rather than impersonal and faux corporate, because the strength is that they are natural. But who am I? They're making millions of dollars during a very cool punk rock festival, and I'm talking about them making millions of dollars during a very cool punk rock festival. So what do I know, you know? But anyway, punk, you know, I'm sad it's not this year. I thought there was going to be one this year. I was really looking forward to it, and I guess there's not going to be. So, that's that, I guess. So we'll see how it pans out. I really hope it's not the end of Punk Rock Bowl. I mean, that would be a huge bummer, wouldn't it? Although I don't think it would be, because the infrastructure that, like, there's so many people that do work on Punk Rock Bowling. I don't think it will be interesting to see. Will it be different? Like Punk Rock, every time you go to Punk Rock Bowling is great in that the acts are pretty, well, they bring back some acts, but there's a great mix of new acts and, you know, like, perennial acts, if you will. And that's one of the things I love about Punk Rock Bowling. But the feeling is the same. You know, the same grounds, generally the same after shows. It's got the same vibe every year, which is a vibe I love. Will that vibe be different in 2023? I hope not.
We'll have to see.
Here's something that that is not cool. Martin Shkreli's out of jail, and he's in a halfway house. He was supposed to do 7 years. He only did four, and he got out on an early release schedule. And say, why is it about Martin Shkreli in the Punk News Podcast? Because, of course, Martin Shkreli, way early on in his days, actually funded a punk or emo or post-punk label. And then, of course, he bought the Wu-Tang $2 million record Once Upon a Time in Shaolin. And he was smarmy and a dick. And also, he raised the cost of an AIDS medication from, like, $17 a pill to, like, $170 a pill, or just some obscene thing. And so the guy went to jail, not for that, but rather for securities fraud. Basically, he got investors to invest in something that he was doing, but he wasn't, but he lied about the paperwork that got them to invest. And so he went to jail, but only for 4 years and not for seven. And the guy's a real creep. And now he's out in jail, and he doesn't seem that busted up. He, you know, a few pictures came around. He seemed like he's already, doesn't seem like he's been too roughed up in jail or beaten down or worn down. You know, I was listening to Johnny Cash's Live at Folsom Prison. Live at San Quentin Prison last week. And he's got the song Live, the song San Quentin. And there's the line, I'll come out a broken, weaker man. And I don't feel that happened with Martin Shkreli. That being said, I hope he's been humbled a little bit. But that being said, it is depressing to say that really money does control the world, because there are poor people that stole a candy bar as a third strike and committed no violent crime that are in jail for 25 years, whereas Martin Shkreli, who jacked AIDS medication way up, was a douchebag and said that, you know, everyone was out to get him when really he was the crook, which is always the case. He gets out in 4 years from a minimum security prison, and he's looking all right. So, but on the other hand, you could say he went to jail. Like, the comment is, I mean, the stance is, people only go to jail when it affects rich people. And Martin Shkreli didn't go to jail not for ripping off people with AIDS, but rather for ripping off super rich investors. But on the other hand, he got out early. So who knows? The guy's a D-bag. I hope he's a better person now and a nicer person and has learned some humility in jail. Has he? I would bet against him, but I don't know. Hallie Bullitt, the former owner of the world's most expensive record. What's your stance? Also, Hallie Bullitt, do you know you have a slight connection to Martin Shkreli?
I do.
Oh, you know about it, right? Yeah.
No.
Oh, so you were in at least one band two bands with Mikey Erg, at least. Mikey mm-hmm. Erg was in Early Riser. Who's the red hair girl in Early Riser?
Red hair?
Kiri. She was friends with Martin Shkreli, and she talked about that on the Punk News Podcast maybe two or three years ago.
Oh, is that true? What?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Wow.
She was friends with him.
Yes.
It's nearly impossible for me to imagine. No, I mean, he had that snarky, when we got out, he had this snarky quote about, like, I got out of real jail easier than I could get out of Twitter jail. Like, he doesn't say, it just seems just as awful as that. Hasn't learned anything. No humility, no regret. Just a bad guy, right?
Hallie Bullitt, does it pay to be evil?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. It does. It does, right?
I think it does, honestly.
I mean, I can't even begin to address that. There's so many ways in which it pays to be evil. there are so many messes we're in right now as a globe, as a planet, that's the root of all of it, right?
And more, what's the solution?
Wealth distribution. We tax the rich and redistribute the wealth. We have basic income. The, what is it, like, less than 1% of, like, Elon Musk's wealth can, cure, or not cure, but, like, tackle world hunger, tackle poverty, pay people living wage, and like all this kind of stuff. So people who have the money step up and actually fucking do something with it, because you can't take it with you.
Can you imagine having the money to solve those kind of problems and just not doing it? Agreed. Just like laying down,
yeah,
head down on the pillow every night and being like, nope.
Yeah, nope. I mean, like honestly, like, if Elon Musk took half his money, he wouldn't even feel it. Like, there's nothing Elon Musk can buy with $200 billion that you can't buy with $100 billion. Like, nothing. There's nothing you can buy for $200, you know? So he could take that, and he could literally fix entire countries. You know what I mean? Like go to pick any country in Africa that's got mass starvation malaria. He could solve it. I mean, you say what you will about Bill Gates, is he saved millions of lives with regards to malaria. You know what I mean? Whereas Elon Musk, like, he's not, like, He could save millions of babies' lives. Literally, he could. And he won't. He won't. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, he could spend his money to save this planet, but instead he's going to save it. He's going to spend it, like, figuring out how to get him and his fucking rich wanker friends off of the planet as it as it goes up in flames. This is so grim. It's so depressing.
But at least he'll buy Twitter, and that'll be privatized. Woo!
Can I tell you, I'm a Grimes fan, and I think all the time, every time I listen to Grimes, I'm like, how is she, what, how, like, what's wrong with her? How could she possibly be?
Well, she's pretty kooky.
It's kooky, but not, I mean, it seems not without a moral compass, which it sort of seems like this guy does not have, he lacks a moral compass.
Do you think Elon Musk is like literally in, actually, Jello Biafra argues that people like Elon Musk and Bezos are literally insane, and that he says if someone has a house full of stuff and they don't do anything with it, we say they're a hoarder and they've got mental problems. And so if someone has billions and billions of dollars and they're not doing anything with it, that's hoarding of money. That's Jello Biafra's statement, which I think I agree with. But is Elon Musk, outside of that statement, is he insane, do you think? Is Jeff Bezos insane?
I mean, yeah, Musk seems like he's, like, obviously brilliant, but also, yeah, I would say there's definitely something unhinged about him, right? Or like, irrational. Some kind of, I mean, he's borderline something. Bezos, I don't know. Bezos just seems like a greedy piece of shit.
Honestly, two jobs ago, a lot of my clients were very, very rich guys, not Elon Musk level, but, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of net worth, you know, and most of them were smart, but not super intelligent, honestly, like your average judge, I would say, or your average high level college professor is smarter than your average billionaire, frankly. But what they don't, I mean, but they're not dumb, but they're not particularly smart. But what they do is they work all the time. They have little to no self-awareness, and they have no concept of doing to others. And I think that's how you become super rich, frankly. I mean, I think I've told this before, but it's crazy how, like, somebody will rip them off for doing something and they'll get furious about it. And you'll say, well, yeah, somebody ripped me off, like, I'd be pretty mad too. But then literally next month, they'll rip someone off the exact same way and have no qualm about it. You know what I mean? It's like, how can you be so mad when someone does that to you, but then when you do something, like, you don't even feel it, you know? Anyways, so I think that's Jeff Bezos, but I do think Elon Musk is insane, and I think he's getting kookier, and frankly, I'm kind of hoping his kookiness is his undoing, frankly.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that.
But on the other hand, that means Bezos is kind of smarter I hate to be talking about billionaires because, like, there are, and I'm not even that hip to it, but there's so many levels of the internet where these, like, people, like, idolize billionaires just because they're billionaires, you know, and they're like, they think they're like Elon Musk, or they think like, listen, if you're over 20 and you're not already a millionaire, you're not like those guys. Sorry, that's the truth. You know what I mean? And so the point being is, where was I going on this? Now I'm like Elon Musk. What was I going to say? Oh, in a way, Bezos is smarter than Musk in that, like, he's super rich and he's just kind of playing it cool and doing his rich stuff, you know, where Elon Musk needs that, like, public attention for some reason, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, I don't pretend to understand the guy. Who could?
But bunch of creeps. Anyways, here's people that are not creeps. Quam! Quam had released a new music video. It's for IDC, which is off their upcoming single, Little Bliss, even though and more called it an EP. It is not an EP, and more, it is a single with two tracks.
Oh, no!
But that being said, I love Quam. Quan put out an album a few years ago now, and it was absolutely fantastic. And I was worried it was kind of the end of the band because we didn't hear from it for a long time. But now the album was just called Quan. But now they're back. They got a new single out. Also, Quan has played two Punk News shows. They played the Punk News Magnificent Matinee and the Punk News Proto Punk Party, and both times they were excellent. I was very psyched to see that we debuted this. But Ed Moore, how did you come to debut this? Because I was mad because I thought I was the Quan guys. Ed Moore steal my friend.
No, I was really surprised, because in the email that I got, I didn't think it was a premiere at first, and then I reread it, and I was like, oh shit, I have to rewrite this.
Who's the email from?
Gabe Corey.
Oh, a PR person?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then my feelings aren't hurt then, because I thought the band reached out to you directly.
No,
and I'm like,
no.
Why did they reach out to Ed? They know me, but that's fine. All right, fair enough. And more, Moore's back in my good graces. Anyway, and more, Quam, IDC, did you enjoy the video, and did you enjoy the song?
I did. I thought it was, I really liked the song. The song is really, really catchy. It's, it's not 2 minutes. It's, like, almost 2 minutes, and it's been going through my head for, like, days. I listened to it again to try to, like, get it out, and it just, like, stuck even farther in here. But, no, like, the song's great. There's, like, the mix of vocalists, like, Eddie's more lead in this song, and it's really good. I was just really surprised with, like, because John is, like, your band. Sorry.
I know why M, for me, this is not me. The particular PR person that M is talking about is one that I butt heads with. So that makes sense.
Oh! Okay. We've solved the mystery.
I was so annoyed. I was like, they're my friends. How dare M steal my friends?
I'll just go on record. I do not know the band. I am open to knowing the band. But
Em, I want you to become friends with Quam. They are awesome. I'm generous
That'd be cool.
enough to spread my friends around.
I promise not to steal them.
You can steal them, Em Moore. If you love something, set it free. And I love Quam.
Nice. But yeah, it's so good. And, like, the video's cool. They're just kind of hanging out in the backyard and the sprinkler's on and they're, like, moving and then they kind of freeze in different poses and then they move again and they, like, group hug and it just... And they all come in for, like, close-ups at different times. It's just a great video. It looks like they had a lot of fun filming it. What did you guys think of Quam? It's a new video.
I liked it all right. I agree. The video had, like a pleasing simplicity to it. Of just, like, it looked like they had just set up a camera in the backyard and, like, just had some fun goofing around. I thought the video was fun and cute.
Well, I didn't think the video was amazing, but I thought it was really cool. I thought it was a real done, simple style video, which can be very effective. I love Quam. Their first album, Quam, was amazing. To me, it was kind of like new wave, circa 2020 or whatever that record came out, 2019. Like, that was like my number two or three record of the year. They're so good that they're punk. They're kind of new wavy and they're kind of weird at points. This song, I thought, was a very traditional kind of pop, almost pop song as opposed to pop punk song. I dug it. I think it's cool. I hope the new album has some weirder or more harder or new wavy tracks. But that being said, I'm enjoying this promising new track, and I think Quam is going to put out another cool – I mean, I haven't heard it yet, but I think Quam's going to put out another cool record soon, and I love this band, and I hope to see them again sometime soon.
It's a single now.
Well done. Anyways, listen, we had Mike Park on the podcast not that long ago, and he just did an episode of his own interview program. He's got a program called Music is Powerful Stuff. And in the episode of Music is Powerful Stuff, he interviews himself, and frankly, people, it's hilarious. It's hilarious in that, like, he says, oh, you're looking real good. And then himself says, oh, thank you, you know. And so Mike Park is a character, but what I'm really enjoying about Mike Park circa 2022 is from, like, 1995 to, like, 2010, people are like, Mike Park, he's an icon. He's a great guy. You know, he's how you should run an independent record label. All things which are very much true, but the public persona of Mike Park was that he's a stand-up good guy. All very true. But it did not reveal the fact that he's a really wacky, weird guy, which no one ever talked about for a long, long time. And I am so glad that the weird, wacky, bizarre Mike Park angle is coming out, because I've known Mike Park since 2006. And so I am enjoying the fact that the real Mike Park is coming out into the public persona. And I'm really enjoying, and I mean, honestly, I think it only makes his art and look better and more interesting. And I certainly am enjoying these frantic, weird, bizarro Mike Park, as opposed to Mike Park, the model, as to how to run an independent record label, which is true.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely just sort of putting it all out there, right? He's like kind of taking it. He's not Joan Jetting us, right? I mean, I thought this was funny. Like, I think a lot of people that have a podcast where they interview other people, like, they kind of actually just want to talk about themselves, right? Which is fine, because some people that do that are amazing. You know, you look at someone like Marc Maron, it's like he's able to just talk about himself, like, brilliantly, and it's super compelling. But, like, I do think there was just something really funny about Mike Park just being like, nope, I just want to talk to me. At this time, I just want to talk to me. And I do, it's so funny how he keeps complimenting himself. He keeps being like, you look great. And then, like, when he talks about his mental health stuff, he'll be like, thanks for being open about that. Thanks for being so honest about it. It's just like, something, you know, I'll be honest, it's like also a little weird. It like made me a little uncomfortable at times. But like, I think it's pretty beautiful that he's clearly going through some shit, and he's just kind of putting it all out there. And, you know, I think it is funny that we just talked about Joan Jett. I mean, we just had a conversation about how disappointing it can be when an artist just will not let you in. I don't know. I think there's something funny and admirable about this.
Do you think, and as you said, all interview programs are really just going to talk about themselves. Do you think our interview kicked off the deep mental health discussion in his interview?
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder. I mean, I don't know, because I haven't heard I don't know how many other interviews he's been doing or what the tone of them has been, but I can see what you're saying. Like,
zero mental health discussion until us.
Yeah. Like, we just kind of, yeah. I think maybe it was, yeah, maybe he was planning on doing that already, or maybe.
And we ruined it for him.
No, but like, for maybe it's just like, oh, well, if I talked about this publicly once, then I can do it again. Maybe just to, you know, it would be nice. I don't want to give us that credit if it's not due, but it would be nice if we kind of helped like kick that open for him. It's just like, okay, well, what the fuck? I'm just going to talk about this stuff now.
And more, what do you think?
Yes. I thought it was great. It made my day. It was so funny. And like, interviewer Mike Park has like a sweater and shorts and like sneakers, and then interviewee Mike Park has like a suit jacket and a button-up shirt and like nice pants and nice shoes, and I just thought it was so funny. And then at the part where they're talking about his mom bringing him lunch, and then, you know, like, interviewee Mike Park's like, yeah, she does, she's so cool, you know, and all this, and then interviewer Mike Park's like, yeah, I know her too, she's pretty rad, or whatever, and it was just the best. And then at the end, when, like, the interviewer version of him is like, I was a little nervous about doing this interview because I'm a huge fan, and then the interviewee part of him was like, same here, I love everything you do. It was really funny. And then he did two performances in it, two acoustic songs. Did You Find the Money Farm and Be All Right? And it was, they're both really good. And Be All Right made me cry. And it was such like a roller coaster, because it's like, it's fun and it's interesting and it's really engaging. And, you know, like, he's being open about mental health, and that's really important. And then, you know, there's lots of humor and lots of stuff. And then just, it had everything. 10 out of 10.
And actually, for some more speculation, because I love speculation.
Yes.
In our interview with Mike Park, I said, Mike, when you wake up, do you say, man, I'm Mike Park, I'm waking up and it's great? And his response was, I definitely don't wake up like that. But then in his interview, he's like, I think you're really great. So which is the real answer? And see, this is what I hit a lot of artists with this question because it is one of my favorite questions. I'm like, when you go out there, are you like, I'm the best? And they usually say, no, I don't do that. You know, I don't believe, I feel like most artists feel like they are the best and they should feel like they are the best. But I guess in the interview situation, they feel it's too awkward to say that they really do think they are the best. But that being said, I do respect when artists say, I am the best. And that's why I do what I do. You know, what do you think is the real answer? That I don't wake up thinking I'm that great, or I think everything I do is great. What's the real answer in the Mike Park world? Because they can't both be true, or can they?
I got the sense that, like, the interviewer was more of, like, a character, right? Like, I don't know if he was – I think he was just kind of going for the humor. I don't know if that interview character that he was playing was really, like, him saying, like, I don't know. I guess he can probably be both, right? I mean, and I think a lot of – I don't know. Right, you can be a person that naturally loves yourself and respects yourself and likes the shit that you do, and then you can have mental illness or you can have depression kind of rob you of that, you know, where I think you could probably be feeling both things about yourself, that you love yourself and fucking hate yourself, right?
Do you think Elon Musk loves himself, or do you think he loves himself and hates himself, or do you think he just hates himself?
Oh.
I think he's loved himself.
I don't even want. Is there something so gross about him? I don't want to think about him or talk about him anymore. I really find him, like, so gross.
Well, speaking about something very gross, the Dead Kennedys are re-releasing Fresh Fruit and Rotting Vegetables, one of the greatest albums of all time. Say, Sean, what could be gross about that? Well, here's the thing is, they heavily remixed the album. Well, actually, not they. Chris Lord Alge, the famous, he's actually a big-time producer that has produced a lot of, like, well, I'll pull up in a second, but a lot of big-time stuff. He remixed Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. Why? I don't know. no one else does either. And frankly, if you ask me, of course, the remix is done by the Dead Kennedys. It is not authorized by Jello, and Jello has openly said he is not down with it and he thinks it's a lame idea. But of course, the Dead Kennedys is always a 3-1 vote. East Bay Ray, DH, and Claws Fluoride versus Jello. So Jello always loses when it comes to DK decisions. And so they're re-releasing this 30th edition of Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. It's going to be out September 30th via Manifesto, which is the DK label, or it's associated with DK. And it's got some archival interviews and stuff. But the Bob Marley set has been doing this, and some other, and actually Hawkwind has been doing this. Robert Fripp of King Crimson is notorious for this. They're remixing albums that didn't need to be remixed in the first place because they sound great. And it's like, of course, with LAMF with Johnny Thunders or Raw Power with the Stooges, there's an argument that the original mix isn't that good, or Systems Overload with Integrity. The original mix isn't that good, so it needs to be corrected or improved. But the Dead Kennedys sounds great. I will, however, give the Dead Kennedys some leeway in that they famously are not happy with the mix, the original mix. And then Jello always wanted to remix it, but then he had a discussion with Tim Armstrong in, like, 1989, and he was saying that he didn't like the sound, and Tim Armstrong said, that's one of our favorite records. We want Operation Ivy to have that same sound. And that's when Jello Biafra said, well, then maybe just better let things lie, which kind of usually is true, particularly with Fresh Fruit, which I think is a great-sounding album. That being said, I always thought that Geza X mixed Fresh Fruit, but he didn't mix Fresh Fruit. And actually, that's a bone of contention between Jello and East Bay Ray, and that Jello says he wanted Geza X to mix Fresh Fruit, which honestly probably would have made it sound a little bit better, and the other guys didn't want to use Geza X for some unusual reason, even though Geza did the original singles, and they sound fantastic. And I realize I'm throwing a ton of information at you, but that's how much I care about Dead Kennedys. At any rate, so the original Dead Kennedys weren't super happy with the mix, but honestly, all the fans love it. Like until they mentioned it, I was never aware that anybody was unhappy with the mix, and everyone that I know that had the album thought it sounded amazing. So anyway, the point with this 2022 mix is that it's particularly cheesy in that it does the biggest cliche of remixes by guitarists, and that it mixes down the vocals and mixes up the guitar, but it doesn't fit. I mean, it just doesn't sound that good, frankly. And it sounds different and worse, and doesn't highlight anything except for the guitars are a little bit louder, and Jello's vocals are a lot flatter. I say, poor play, not good. Will I buy it? Yes, because they're one of my favorite bands, and I'm a completist, but I'm a sucker. But I think it's in poor taste. I just think it's pointless and not needed. It doesn't add anything to the band's legacy, and slightly subtracts from the legacy. Hallie Bullitt, what do you say?
Yeah, it seems unnecessary. I mean, we've talked about this before. Like, as an artist, if you're unhappy with a mix. It could be just so gratifying to just go scratch that itch and like get it remixed and like just hear it the way you want to hear it. But I don't, this album's been, it's just been re-released so many times on different labels. Like, you know, I heard complaints about, you know, that 25th anniversary edition that they did. Like, I heard complaints about that too, that it just like, it didn't have any like bonus songs, that the DVD that came with it didn't have like anything particularly mind blowing on it. So it sort of seems like this has just been kind of flipping over the same pancake over and over again, looking to see what's on the other side. It's like, that's still just the same pancake. So, that was a weird analogy, but it was the best I could do in the moment. I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's weird to listen to remixes, John. I'm like, I'm not surprised that you had a bad reaction to this, because when you've heard a song over and over and over again mixed a certain way, there are times when, like, even if it's mixed better, like, your ears are just going to soundly reject it. They're just going to be like, no, nope, yeah. Isn't what I'm used to, you know? And you grow attached to the way that you've heard something. In fact, when you're an artist and you're recording, they tell you, I have been told a few times to just to be careful how much you listen to really rough mixes. Like, an engineer will give you like a really rough mix just to show you like, okay, this is what we got. Like, these are all the parts, but it's not mixed yet. And it can kind of throw your ear off to listen to something that's not, you know, you'll get attached to certain things that maybe just aren't even like the right thing for the song. And I don't know. Yeah. So I had a lot of thoughts about this, and those were my thoughts.
And more, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I am a Dead Kennedys. Without Jell-O is not Dead Kennedys, so I will not acknowledge them. And the video doesn't work in Canada, so I couldn't listen to it.
Lucky you.
That's so funny.
Chris Lord Alves, Diana Ross, Stevie Nicks, Afrika Bambaataa. Let's see here. Bruce Springsteen.
Green Day.
So he's been around the block, people. So listen, it's just not good. It's not good. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it just don't work out. You know, listen, here's something that, did I skip a story? No, I did not. Okay.
No.
Here's something that people might dig or might not. Starcrawler, the LA band, have released a new video for the song Roadkill. The video was directed by Gilbert Trejo, who is the son of Danny Trejo. And at the very end, Steve-O from Jackass shows up. And more. What's your stance on Starcrawler's Roadkill video?
I really like the video. I think it's funny, and it's great. Like, there's a – so the band are all dressed in, like, pink and white tuxedo things, and they're running, and they're being chased by this pink car with a like a little lamb on the front, like a little like kid's toy, and it looks like it's so innocent, and then it looks so ominous because it's just like, I'm gonna mow you down, you know. So like the car is chasing them, and they're trying to get away from the car, and you know, at one point one of the members like throws a banana peel at it and it doesn't do anything, and then you know, the only time that the car stops really is like when this like elderly person like waddles out in like a bathrobe and like using a walker, like waddles out in front of the car because the car is just about to squish the lead singer. So, you know, goes across, and then immediately after, the old person has cleared, the car like starts up again. So eventually, you know, the car runs them over and they're squished. It's just their clothes. And yeah, Steve-O gets out and everything. So I'm like, they didn't really establish a story here. Why are they being chased by the car? What's going on? You know, did they try to steal the car? Did Steve-O hijack the car? And they're like luxury limo drivers somehow. The car is not a limo, but like, you know, kind of something like that. So I would like more backstory, but I thought it was fun. The song is
really catchy. When I first heard it, I wasn't sure, like, really what to think of it, because it was like, this reminds me of something. And I've listened to it a couple times trying to figure out what it reminds me of, and I really can't put my finger on it. But I do like it. And I do want to check out more from the band. I haven't got around to it yet, but I want to. Because they were touring with Surfboard, and I saw some of their, like, live videos on Instagram, and they looked, like, insane. So, yeah, I thought it was neat and cool. Oh, yeah, the car runs into a box of milk. That's, like, the big stunt. I was like, there was something else. It looks cool.
They're going to be touring with My Chemical Romance, too, then.
Yeah, they're one of the openers. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, my God, like, just in that same thing. So, Witch Fever, they're opening, like, tonight or something, and they posted a video from, like, the stage, and the people are going absolutely insane, and it's so cool, and I emailed the PR person to try to set up an interview with My Chemical Romance, and I got a response, and it was like, no, they're not doing interviews right now, and I was like, oh, okay, let me know if they do them.
I mean, at least, at least they're not doing interviews with anybody.
Yeah. What did you guys think of Starcrawler?
Did you like this song?
I thought the song was okay. I think this song's kind of punky, kind of glammy. I think it's all right. For me, I kind of wish it had a little bit more edge on my Surfboard, if that's the angle we're going for. The track sounds very produced, but I think it's good. I mean, their song "I Love LA" is a pretty cool song. I think it's pretty cool, not amazing. I think the video is real cool. I like how it's got kind of like a Final Destination vibe. And I there's one part where Ara DeWild, she's the singer, she's sitting on a chair and she steps up and the car smashes the bench right behind her. And I'm like, wow, did they do that in like real time, or is that like animation or something? Because if that went wrong, she would have been killed. So I like that one scene, like, really blew my mind. I think the video is real cool. I like how the limo is all pink, and I don't know what, like, I would think that I would hate Jackass, but I like most of the Jackass guys. I like Steve-O. I'm like, oh yeah, Steve-O, man, he's doing his thing, you know. So I like Steve-O. I like Steve-O in it, and yeah. So I think the video is cool. I think Starcrawler is cool. I think musically they could develop a little bit more and maybe develop a more of their own identity. Right now they kind of have this thing that a lot of bands out in the LA area have, is we're a glam punk kind of band and we do glam punk kind of music. But I think they could have a little bit more self. They've got everything else. They've got the stage presence. The songs are fine. I think the songs need more unique identity. The one other thing, though, and maybe this is a petty complaint, is if we look at the Quam, you can tell the Quam video is like a low-budget video. This video seems very high-budget, which I'm not against necessarily. And certainly Arrow, I think, is the daughter of somebody pretty famous. But there's like cliche moves they do in the video, which bothers me. There's one video where they do the thing that was developed by Aerosmith, where Arrow and like the other guitar player, they both have like messed up and a lot of hair. They like leave their hair together and like sing the refrain together. Like Aerosmith invented that. And it's like that a lot of like big budget, like rock bands do that for some reason. And so I got kind of put off by the cliche moves when I feel like you've got something kind of cool going, and I feel as if you went weird or different, then you could be great, like Surfboard, like Aim One of the Sniffers, like Quam. You know, that's my opinion. Hallie Bullock, what's your stance?
Yeah, like almost like really, like you said just exactly what I was thinking. So yeah, so what you said, like I feel like I wish the music excited me a little bit more. It just feels like a lot. You hear a lot of bands from LA like kind of sounding like that. The videos are cool. Like they definitely, you know, either the band has a great sense of humor or they know how to pair up with people that are creative and able to do, you know. I agree, John, that the I Love LA video was great. I think Arrow's mom directed that one actually. This Gilbert Trejo video I think is is so funny. And M, you're right. That moment where like the little old person is crossing the street, it's just like, it's so clever and so funny. And I guess Gilbert Trejo also did another video for a single that they put out called Good Time Girl. And it's in, they have the lamb thing going on in that video too. Like they're all wearing masks in that video. In the Good Time Girl video, they all wear masks that are like that weird, creepy children's kind of storybook lamb kind of face. It's like, it's pretty affecting. It's like pretty weird as a mask. I like them. I like their personality. I just wish I liked the songs better, you know?
Well, speaking of something that is weird and affecting, Pooch Riley is now working on the follow-up to the amazing film Sorry to Bother You. In case you didn't know, Sorry to Bother You was kind of Boots' masterwork, if you will, that he'd been working on for literally like 10 years or something. It was an amazing movie, and it's weird, and it's got three soundtracks associated with it. And basically, it was about a telemarketer guy that gets involved in the telemarketing world, and the film was full of magical realism. Quick question, Hallie and Em, did you see Sorry to Bother You?
I did.
Amazing, right? Amazing.
Yeah, it kind of fell apart towards the end for me, but the style of it, the ideas in it, and the performances were all good enough that I still enjoyed it.
See, I liked that it totally went off the rails completely at the end. Like, I thought that was like the perfect ending to that movie. Like, yeah. Like the only thing I would say is the very ending seemed rushed. That was my only criticism. But like I saw that in the theater, and like, you know, I don't see that many movies, but you know, I go see like Spider-Man, or like, oh, Spider-Man, he saved the day, you know. but there was a cost to saving the day, you know, and so now we'll have to live with that, you know. Like, oh, you know, like, or you know, I'll go see like, but I left this movie with my jaws on the floor. I'm like, wow, that was like truly a unique, amazing film that wasn't specifically calculated to get money out of my wallet and get me to come back and buy popcorn like every Marvel movie is, you know. Like it was the kind of movies they used to make in the set. I don't know anything about movies, but like I love movies from the 70s that are weird or offbeat or just different. Like now all movies are like act one, act two, act three, happy ending. That's like every movie in the movie theater now. Whereas this movie was just so off the rails, but it made sense at least the first two thirds, and the last third like was just wacky, which I loved. Anyways, I thought it was fantastic. Anyways, Boots of the Coup, who has done multiple interviews with Punk News, who is a cool guy, who was also on Punk News Mixtape Number 2, he's finally working on his long rumored new project. The new project is called I'm a Virgo, and it stars Jarrell Jerome as a 13-foot black guy that lives in Oakland. And of course, race will probably be part of the thing, because that's a big part of Boots's style of commentary. And so, I wonder, like, will it be weird to watch a show about a guy that's 13 foot tall? Because that's a lot of visual difference in every scene, you see. But also, Boots said, I'm not even really going to tell you what it's really about. So, like, because he wants to make it weird, you know, Sorry to Bother You, the second half of the film, like in the previews, it's about a telemarketer and it's a magical realist. So some kind of weird, funny things happen. And the second half of Sorry to Bother You is just so off the wall. Like the previews, like, don't even allude to it. So I think that's what he's doing here. And so anyways, so who knows what it's really going to be about? He doesn't want to tell people what it's about. He just wants people to see it. It's going to be a mini series, I think, or even a full series. And so he's filming right now, and they need extras for Thursday and Friday in Oakland. And so if you are listening to this Friday morning, you should run out to Oakland and go there and do that, because you can be in a Boots Riley film. The film, the show, or the also stars Brett Gray, Walton Goggins, Mike Epps, Carmen Ejogo, Carrie Young, Olivia Washington, and Alias Barnes. But here's the kicker: the show will be on Amazon Prime. And you say, well, so what? John Lachers are on Amazon Prime. But Boots, Boots is super anti-capitalism. Like, he's probably the most anti-capitalism MC there is, or if he's not, that he's close to it. He's very radical. He was a community organizer for years. He hates capitalism, and he super hates gigantic corporations. But here he is on Jeff Bezos's The Second Richest Guy in the World streaming channel. And so you could say, well, is that hypocritical? And maybe it is. I don't know what Boots' response would be, but I would speculate that Boots' response would be the following, because he's talked about this before. Boots says you can't if in a world where there is capitalism, you can't exist outside capitalism. So that kind of says because capitalism is so pervasive, no matter what you do, you're existing in capitalism. But on the other hand, you could say, well, that's kind of an easy excuse, so you don't have to really, you know, walk your walk. I don't know. Whereas Penny Rimbaud of Crass has a much different opinion. Penny Rimbaud of Crass says, I can't change the world, but I can change my immediate surroundings. And that's why he lives in a 400-year-old cottage out in the woods in England and, you know, craps outside and composts it. You know what I mean? So it's two different ways of looking at things, you know? And so I don't know. Is this hypocritical? Does it matter? Will this be great art? I will say it will definitely be great art. And I'm very, but then again, I'm gonna bootleg this. I'm not gonna pay to watch it. I'm just gonna rip it off, frankly. But I do want to see it. But is it hypocritical? Maybe. Howie Bullitt, hypocritical? And are you excited to see this?
I mean, it's hard, right? He's like got producers to answer to. It's like he's making the film, but there's a lot of people that, you know, go into writing the check to make a film. And so
you need a lot of money to make this kind of art look good.
Yeah.
Easy,
you know
I mean?
And so I don't know that he gets the final say about where it streams. And like, and if he does, I don't know. He may be able to justify it by saying like, well, my ideas are very anti-capitalism, very anti-corporate. So, you know, if Jeff Bezos wants to put my message on his platform, then, you know, so be it. I mean, you as an artist, you get your funding and your money where you can, and you get your message out any way you can. I don't know. I know what you're saying. I mean, I've talked a lot about how I don't support Amazon and I canceled my membership and I steal my family members' passwords so that I can watch things on Prime if I occasionally want to. You know, I refuse to give that guy my money. But I don't know. I like the first Unlovables album was paid for by a Gap ad that I did. Like, you know, it's like my punk album was paid for by the Gap.
Is that online? Let me see. Hallie Bullitt Gap.
You know, but I was like, all right, I'm going to take this money from the Gap and I'm going to put out a punk album with it. Like, there's something kind of awesome about, you know?
Yeah.
There's something, you know, I don't know. As an artist, you get your money where you can, you get your message out any way you can, I think. Not any way. I mean, obviously within limits, but I don't judge too harshly for this.
What if Elon Musk called up and said, I want to put out your album? What did you then?
Oh my God. Ew. Ew, stop making me talk about Elon Musk. I'm not answering. I don't want to talk about Elon Musk anymore.
And more. Martin Shkreli calls up and says, I want to pay you $2,000 to interview Maddie Grace. What do you do?
I up my price to try to bleed him dry. Because if he's going to send me money, he's sending me all of the money. So then I take his power and subvert it. Yeah.
At any rate, do you care about Bruce Roddy's new show, Emmore, or you not care?
Oh, I think this is going to be really cool. I think this is going to be really nuts. I think there's going to be lots of twists and turns, and I think it's going to get really weird, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, actually, you know, Boots being weird and trippy, like, for a TV show, that could get, like, really weird and trippy, couldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be so cool.
Well, there you have it. Well, I'm excited, and as Boots say, I love boosters, and I will be boosting the show to watch it. Hallie Bull, any final words for this week?
I don't think so. Oh, I sent it to you guys. I don't know what you thought of it, but I'm loving this band Art Sick. That I heard on, you know, WFMU is the fucking greatest radio station ever. And I'm lucky that I live in Jersey and I get to just listen to it when I drive around in my car. And I don't know, I heard this band Artsick on FMU and I was just like totally blunt. I nearly crashed my car, I told you. So I don't know. Yeah, I know you're not going to mix music in, John, but you know, if people are into like sort of, I'd say like, some of that like stuff that came out on like K Records in the 90s, like Fastbacks, like that kind of, if you're into that kind of like poppy punk, check out Artsic. That's good. Those are my parting words. And don't catch COVID. I caught COVID. Don't catch COVID, you guys. It's fucking uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable situation to be in.
And more. Any closing words?
Check out all my interviews. There's Guilt, yeah. There's Maddie Grace, there's Boring Girls, there's Casey and Corey of Tarantula Tapes. Tomorrow, Friday, there's going to be a No Bro premiere on the site, so keep your eyes peeled for that.
Oh, shit!
And billionaires, give me all your goddamn money. I'll do something with it.
And we'll see you next week.